Without further ado, Hadibrot Bein Adam LaChaviro. So last week we already mentioned that the Aseret Hadibrot comes in two packages. You have the right side and the left side. And the right side is the Bein Adam LaMakom, between man and God. In big terms, we call it the ritual side of Torah and Mitzvot. I mean, obviously it's also the philosophical side, the belief in God. According to the Rambam, it's more than belief. It's the awareness of the existence of God. And we'll get into this, not today, but it has to do with philosophical speculation. To figure out that a Kadosh Baruch Hu really exists, and the denial of anything other than that, that's right, the second commandment of Lo Yir Lecha Elohim Achirim Al Panai. But then there's Shabbat is there. We'll have to discuss why honoring parents is on that right side, Bein Adam LaMakom. But then you have the social mitzvot of what's called Bein Adam LaChaviro. So remember, my wife once had a comment many years ago, and she even asked me to say it over to the Rav at one of my transportation occasions with him. She said that, you know, there's a thing called right-wing yeshivas. She says those are the yeshivas that do not pay a premium at all about the Bein Adam LaChaviro, but they're very, very concerned about the Bein Adam LaMakom. So, okay, that was like taking a real slap at the, you know, I don't want to chas v'shalom generalize and so on, but I do feel that Bnei Yeshiva, Bnei Torah have to be the first ones to be the shining example when it comes to Bein Adam LaChaviro, because that's what everybody sees. And what happens more often than not is people would like to see how much of a tzaddik they are in the ritual side. And areas of, let's say, hidur mitzvah, adorning and beautifying a mitzvah, the question is, who are you doing it for? I had this once with somebody with a mezuzah, and a person, you know, wanted to put out a tremendous amount of money for a very artistic mezuzah case, but have a very cheap parasha inside. And I said, just the other way, invest in a superb parasha and put it in a 10 shekel plastic. I mean, because that's not the Hidur Mitzvah. The Hidur Mitzvah is the... I'm not home. The Hidur Mitzvah is the klaf, the way it was written, the sincerity. Yeah, the size will impact on whether the letters are going to be wholesome and so on. All these things are Hidur Mitzvah. You don't have to be a professional cipher to look at two different parashiyot and say, this is better than the other. Of course, then a cipher will explain to you why this is better than the other and why it costs three times the price. So, fine, that's where you should invest in Hidur Mitzvah and not so much in external casing where the halakha doesn't even demand an external casing for a mezuzah. That's just to protect the parasha from the elements, but you can accomplish that by putting it in a, you know, a sakit nylon, a plastic bag, a saran wrap, and it's going to be protected from the elements. But all right, you know, you want it to look nice too. So I'll give you an example. When it comes to tefillin, for example, so you want to have an upgraded tefillin. Believe me, you can get a kosher pair of tefillin for $250, but you can also spend $1,000. And again, you don't have to be a professional cipher to take a look at the two and see which is, you know, a preferred quality and why it's going to cost more money. I'm not talking about the $25 bar mitzvah set of Macy's, which is cardboard and printed parchas. But it's very sad, but you know, there are people who buy that because they figure the kid's going to wear it once in his life just for the photo album, so why should he spend $250? So, then you know, people go to town on the tefillin bag and so on. It's nice, believe me, don't get me wrong. It's nice and all that. But that's external hidur. The Rav gave a whole shir on this, on hidur mitzvah, glorifying and adorning mitzvah, that there's hidur in the very, very object of the mitzvah, and then there's the around and around hidur mitzvah. So the mezuzah case is what's called the around and around. That's external. But the parasha itself, and a guy tells me, he says, but nobody sees the parasha. What do you mean nobody sees the parsha? Why should I invest money in the parsha if it's covered the whole time? Achenvei, what can I tell you? That's an attitude. Who are you doing the Hidur Mitzvah for? For the neighbors. They should see that you bought an agam, you know, nice artistic mezuzah case. I have nothing wrong with agam. He's a fine fellow and does wonderful artwork. And, you know, you can't miss his style. But it's almost like a Kalbach Niggin, you know, you can't miss the style. But any artist has his or her style. But the mitzvah of Hidur Mitzvah is the parasha. That's the real Hidur Mitzvah. And then you can want to add a little bit, fine, that's also okay. So, you know, when it comes to Bein Adam LaMakom, between man and God, this is between you, man, and God. It's not between man, God, and the neighbors. You have to be careful about that. Social mitzvot are between man and man, between human beings. And it's interesting that when the Mishnah, very famous Mishnah, at the end of Masechet Yoma, the Masechet deals with Yom Kippur, so it says on the pasuk, "Ki b'yom hazeh yechaper aleichem l'taher etchem mikol chatotechem lifnei Hashem titaru." And on this day, God will atone; He will purify for all the sins. Mikol chatotechem lifnei Hashem titaru. So this we just read a week ago, a week and a half ago, on Parshat Achrei Mot. Actually, no, we read it 2.5 weeks ago. I heard it twice, because I was in San Diego, and I heard Achrei Mot again. So in case I missed it the first time, you know, this pasuk, I certainly got a rerun the next week. Ki b'yom hazeh yechaper aleichem, but we all heard it on Yom Kippur. We learned this pasukim on Yom Kippur in the morning. And the Mishnah says, "Mikol chatotechem lifnei Hashem titavu," that on mitzvot ben adam lemakom, between man and God, as Yom Kippur mechaper, Yom Kippur atones. But on mitzvot ben adam lachaviro, between man and man, ein yom kippurim mechaper ad sheyaratzeh bo chaviro. Yom Kippur does not atone until you take care of it on the human level, on the social level. You've got to ask mechila. You can't insult somebody, you can't rob from somebody, and then come on Yom Kippur, the Rabbi Shalom Shamda Bagadnu Chatati, excuse me, doesn't work like that. First, clear the air with the person. But that doesn't mean that it's over. Because the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu who said you have to observe Shabbat and Kashrut, the ritual, said that you're not allowed to steal, or you're not allowed to insult, and you're not allowed to say Lashon Hara. The same Rabbi Nishlov. So it's also a chait that requires kapara, atonement, and Yom Kippur. But there's a necessary prerequisite. Ein Yom HaKippurim Mechaper Ad, until Shiratze Bo Chaviro. So Ritzui Chaviro, it's, you know, trying to make up with the person who you harmed or injured or whatever, insulted, that has to be done first. Then you take your case to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and you say, okay, look, I took care of it with my buddy, and we're okay. Now I'd like, you know, kapara on Lashon Hara, whatever it was that you're asking kapara. That's fair game. That's what has to be done. And that's why it's Bikol Chatotechem. It's all the Chataim. But it's not just the Chataim Lefnei Hashem, as the Drasha seems to imply. So everything is Bein Adam LaMakom in final analysis, except that some are exclusively Bein Adam LaMakom, between man and God, and the others are Bein Adam LaChaviro as well. They're also social, and they're there to protect and guarantee a healthy society. Now, if you examine the seven mitzvot of Noach, so there's a mitzvah, first of all, they have the three out of the seven have to do with against murder and against adultery and against idol worship. So idol worship is Ben Adam LaMakom. But the other two are clearly Ben Adam LaChavero. And then Zlo Tignov, there's against theft. And then against saying false witnesses, that they should really have a judiciary to set up. And so on. And then there's Eva Menachai, which is a kashrus issue that the Torah did not want that goyim should act in such a cruel manner by just severing a limb of an animal while the animal's still alive. And get nausea just thinking about Eva Menachai. But it's there to teach some basic tzar balei chayim as well, which is a universal idea, and so on. Now, if you open up the Encyclopedia Talmudit, the Talmudic Encyclopedia. It is one of the very first volumes that came out, because it's letter Ben Noach. So Ben Noach has seven mitzvot. The only thing is that there are many of the great Rishonim in the Middle Ages who said the seven are similar to the 10 of the Aseret HaDibrot. It's not just 10 individual Dibrot. They are headliners for all of 613. The one who says it clearly is Rabbi Sadia Gaon. He says the Aseret HaDibrot is the DNA, that's my words now, it's the genetic code, the Torah code of all the 613 mitzvot. And he was a Yafeh Doresh Yafeh Mekayem. Not only did he say a nice drasha, but he composed a poem, a very long-winded poem, where the poem simply is a poetic rendition of all the 613 mitzvot, that some of the Sephardic communities actually say / sing it on Shavuos. Can't get a better poem for Shavuot than a poem that's going to give you the entire 613. The other thing is, it's 613 according to Rav Sadia Gaon. I think the Rambam took issue with some of them, but that's okay. But at least we understand the concept that what Aseret HaDibrot, what Ten Commandments are all about. It's not just a film with Charlton Heston. It's the symbol of Kol HaTorah Kula. It's everything is there. So some Rishonim say the same with the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach. It doesn't expand to 613, but according to the maximalists, it expands to 30. It means goyim have 30 mitzvot, not seven.
but 30 mitzvot. For example, just a good example, it says they're against Avodah Zarah. Okay, so a goy is not supposed to believe in Avodah Zarah. So what is he supposed to believe in? He's supposed to believe in one God. Does that mean he's Jewish? No. Where does it say that if you believe in one God, you're automatically Jewish? Doesn't mean that. You're Ben Noach. And a Ben Noach is monotheistic, coming through Shem and coming to Avraham Avinu. When it says, Veta nefesh asher asu b'charan, and Parshat Lech Lecha. And Rashi says, Avraham megayer et ha'anashim, v'sara megayer et anashim, doesn't really mean converted in the halachic sense. It means he succeeded in impacting on men and women. So Avraham and Sarah together, impacting on men and women, to leave the pagan world, but to believe in one God. And if you read Zechariah Yudalit, which is our Haftarah for Sukkot, we have the invitation of the nations of the world to come to Beit HaMikdash and participate in Avodat Hashem on Sukkot. And if you look at Shlomo Melech's Tfilah on the opening day ceremony of the first Beit HaMikdash, in Malachim Aleph Perichet, among other things, he invites the nations of the world to come and see the Beit HaMikdash as the Beit Knesset Merkazi, the central house of prayer. We always talk about the international house of pancakes that they have in America, but this is the international house of prayer. That's what it is. And Yeshayahu, in his messianic vision, Ki Beiti Beit Tfilah Yikarei L'chol Amim, it's for everybody. So this what means to be a Ben Noach. So some of the Rishonim say, not only is the don'ts, do not serve Avodah Zarah, but the implication is the do. You should also be aware that there's one God. That's a mitzvah asay in our book, formally. But in the Ben Noach, it's a category of the Avera of Avodah Zarah. But it's a mitzvah for the goy to believe in one God. It's a mitzvah. And so on. The various manifestations of the seven mitzvot B'nei Noach branch out then to subcategories, which then add up to about 30. If I'm not mistaken, there's a chart in the appendix of the volume that talks about Ben Noach. So there's a chart at the end of that book, and it gives you all the various viewpoints, and I say the maximum works out to about 30, which is significant. By the way, you know, there's an international movement called Bnei Noach in the world today. One of my sons was actually involved in it for a short while through a French Rav, very distinguished, charismatic French Rav, Rav Shirky, who unfortunately sustained the loss in Pigua of a son. But a wonderful Rav. He actually teaches at Machon Meir and other, and he's in Baca area. There's a lot of French community, if I haven't figured it out, in Ol Nechama. But he appears on a very... Yeah, Machia.
B'nai Noach ministers are recognized by the American military now.
What, the B'nai Noach?
Yeah.
Okay, so I didn't even know that. That's interesting, that there's even a recognition of it as a religion. I understand there's several million adherents to B'nai Noach throughout the world. And basically, I've actually seen interviews, my son showed me material, that you have somebody who was born Christian, was whatever denomination it was, and felt, you know, zealous that this wasn't it. He's not agnostic, he's not atheist. He believes in God. He just doesn't want to practice Christianity. He doesn't want to practice Islam either. He also doesn't want to convert to Judaism. But he's not out there in limbo. Ben Noach means, yes, there's a framework for you too. And by the way, some of the counters of the 30 mitzvot there include tefillah. Because tefillah, as the Rav explained philosophically, is a need. It's a spiritual need.
So do they have any kind of a formalized... in any
right, it never happens. So Rav Shirky actually composes a siddur for the B'nai Noach. He's like the rabbinic authority of this organization. Now, you can argue with it. Not. I know that Rav Shirky had asked me 2 years ago, two, three years ago even, if I can bring this to the attention of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecharon Levracha. Rav Aaron was so sick already. He was physically, he was broken. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. It would have been interesting to hear Rav Lichtenstein's opinion about the proposed siddur of Rav Shirky for the B'nai Noach. It would have been interesting. But that never happened.
Is there any kind of a film or something that we could probably educate our folks?
First of all, go YouTube Ben Noach or Google Ben Noach in Hebrew. Ben Noach. You'll get all the info. So it's out in the public. No top secret here. So I'm saying is that even in the realm of tefillah, clearly there's an urge to daven. Yes, go for it.
You know, there's a concept here in Eretz Israel called Ger Toshav. Ger Toshav is a status that says a non-Jew living in Eretz Israel that accepts the fact that there's a Jewish mamlacha, monarchy here, days of David HaMelech and so on, but has no interest in being expelled, would like to remain here as a citizen, as a minority, so he has rights. And if he accepts upon himself seven mitzvot b'nei Noach, he's called a Ger Toshav. Ger in the sense he's not Jewish, but he's Toshav, he's a resident. So it's a type of mixture, it's a Chol Moed type of thing, Ger Toshav. And the Rambam says he has a portion of Olam Haba. He has a chelik in Olam Haba. Rambam says it clearly in Hilchot Melachim. So there's status to this Ger Toshav, and which means he's observing the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach. And as you know, that you know the Bab Shereb Zechon Lebracha went on a binge every year on a project. The first one was Tefillin, which never ended. They slew the Tefillin guys out in the street. But every year it was a different project. Whatever the project was, the Rebbe gave a whole speech. One year the project was Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. He wanted his shluchim to go out to the world and start telling them. And the biggest accomplishment was when Ronald Reagan was president of the United States, so he used to have a Shabbat afternoon radio program where he used to schmooze. It was, Shomer Shabbat never heard it because it was 2 p.m. on a Shabbos. But they used to just talk off the cuff, just talk very informal type of, as they say, l'redet el'am, using the radio. You know, he was an actor when in his earlier days, and before that he was the broadcaster for the Chicago Cubs, the baseball, and then he became president of the United States, you know, Kachazev America, and so on. Between Bain LeBain, he was governor of California, but the most important thing was he was the president of the Actors Guild in California. That launched him to political power. And then he became governor, and so the rest is history. So the Rebbe succeeded with the they have in Washington the lobby, strong lobby, the Chabad, to getting Reagan on one of his Shabbos afternoon speeches, talks, to denounce to the American public in honor of the Rebbe's I think his 80th birthday, whatever it was at the time, Bab Shereva, one of Sight, the great leader, Hasidic leader, he takes upon himself the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach, and he urges all Americans to do the same. The Babich made a lot of propaganda on that. They got a lot of mileage on that statement from President Ronald Reagan. Yeah, yeah, it helped the cause in terms of the publicity for this particular campaign. On Shabbos. Well, the goy was never obligated to keep Shabbat. Not only that, you know, there's a statement in the Gemara that has to be taken with kid gloves. Goy she Shabbat chayav mita. If a goy keeps Shabbos, he deserves the death penalty. So of course, the Rambam says, one second. It doesn't mean the Beit Din's going to execute. It's just a very sharp expression that Chazal sometimes use when they say no, it shouldn't be done. No different than if a person doesn't have a ma'ariv at night. Regular time, and he says, I have time. You could have Ma'ariv at 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock. He falls asleep and he missed Ma'ariv. So the Gemara says, Chayav Mita. Because what does it mean? It means he was negligent. He should have done it on time, and look what happens when you sometimes push things off. With a tough. Yeah. So there's a story. The Gemara does use that expression, Goyshe Shabbat Chayamita. There's a story that was told of two balabatim, sincere people. At the end of a long work day, they had a chavruta. It was very nice. They learned for an hour every night. And it's a very nice thing to do. And this was going on for 30 years. And then one night, during this learning period, it like kind of slips out of one of them. He says that he's really not Jewish. What? What do you mean you're not Jewish? We're learning Torah together for 30 years, I'm not even supposed to learn Torah with you. And you're a Shomer Shabbos. Everybody sees you in the neighborhood. So he says, no. Every Shabbos, I take a bobby pin, I put it in my pocket, and I carry. She says, but what does that help? There's an Eruv here. So he says, I don't hold from the Eruv. The Machman.
Also, somebody, I think, who's in the conversion process is not supposed to...
That's correct. That's the same reason. As we tell the person who's learning for Giyur to do something on Shabbat to break the spirit, because we want really to train him to be a Shomer Shabbat, but we draw his attention to the fact, strike a match, do something that's going to be clearly an act of a violation of Shabbat, because you're not yet obligated in Shabbat. They've said that. The Kotzke Rebbe, you've heard of Rabbi Menachem Mendel from Kotzk? So he said, what does it mean, Goy she Shabbat Chayav Mita? If a Goy already assumed, understood, the beauty and sanctity of Shabbat, he already is at that level, that madrega, and doesn't run on Matzah Shabbos to become Jewish, chayav bita, is not worth anything. In other words, the point is, you're already there. You're already up to Shmirat Shabbat, and you can't go the whole distance of becoming a Shomer Torah mitzvot. Something's wrong there. Something's wrong. You can't just parcel out Shabbat as an independent time. Oh, this I like, pick and choose. Doesn't work like that. So you have the ritual, the right side of the luchot, and the left side. And of course, that's the left side, the Ben Adam L'Chaviro, that's usually very public. And that's where it is extremely important for everyone, but especially Shomrei Torah Mitzvot, to be particularly careful, because if there's violation there, it's not only a violation of the Ben Adam L'Chaviro, but there's also an element of Chil Hashem. People say, no, this is an Ish Torah, how can you do that? I remember one of my first years in Ramot, back in the late 1980s, so Yom Kippur, I made a comment, I opened up one of the drashot. I said, if you had to buy a used car from a member of the Knesset, which political party would you go to? Or better, which wouldn't you go to? So immediately everybody's calling out, wouldn't go to a Chaver Knesset Dati. Now that's a terrible thing. It's a terrible thing. Whether it's true or not true, but the fact that some people had this impression that if you're a Dati, if you're Haredi, that you're certainly going to, not going to be the person who's going to sell you a used car with integrity. And everybody called on one person who, without a doubt, his integrity was impeccable, but he was a big shaygetz in terms of Ben Adam L'Makom, a Raful Eitan. He was a very honest person. And people said, from Raful Eitan, I buy a used car without even taking it to a garage for testing. Because whatever he tells me about the car, 100% true. Now, it's very nice that Raful Eitan had this reputation of being impeccable integrity. But why couldn't that? You could not say that about every single Chaver Knesset with a kippah. Why couldn't you say that? There's something wrong. There's something wrong if the integrity is not impeccable. With somebody who's a Shomer Torah Mitzvot, something is terribly wrong. You should know that, I'm sure you're reading the papers, even if you read just the Jerusalem Post, sometimes you hear about the scandals in New York, in various yeshivas, and in Kiryas Yoyal, and this and that. I'm sad. So, it's up until 1975, yeshivas didn't receive a penny from the state, from the government, because separation of church and state. In spite of the fact that in the secular studies, the yeshivas had to provide the identical education as a public school, but parochial schools received nothing. So, of course, there was a coalition between the Catholic schools and the yeshivas to try to get some congressional help on this. Eventually, things got softened up. For example, there was lunch program, they got aid, and certain textbooks, and certain laboratory equipment. Certain things that were clearly, they weren't asking the government to buy, chumashim and mishnayos. But certain things that the government required, fine. But that opens up the door to shchitut. You know what shchitut is? To scandals and so on. It opens up the door. And our Rebbe, the Rav Zichron Lebracha, in Maimonides School in Boston, and he told this to me in the 70s, says this yeshiva will be funded by tuition and contributions only. Even though there are federal programs out there that most probably we can qualify for this or that, he says, look, as long as the Rav tells me like this, as long as I'm alive, everything's going to be all right. I'm going to watch it. Rav was impeccable integrity. Everybody knew that. But, nobody lives forever. Who knows who's going to be the Menahel in, 50 years? Says that the fact that there's pressure, beating the budget and so on, it's so great, the pressures are so great, that sometimes you slip a little bit, you cut corners and so on. The Rav didn't want that to happen, so he put it into the constitution of the yeshiva that no government expense, no government help, no allocations. That's it, finished. No allocations. So that nobody should fall prey to that kind of corruption that we are unfortunately witness. And the corruption begins where some of these programs, like the lunch program, is per capita. So all you have to do is inflate the lists of the students of the yeshiva. I mean, it happened here too, by the way, with Misrad HaDatot, with all kinds of allocations from the religious ministry, which was also per capita for koilos and yeshivas and so on. It's a terrible thing. It's a terrible thing when it happens. And it's even worse when the story breaks, and then some people with nice beards go to jail, it's a terrible thing. It's a chil Hashem, yeah.
I just want to point out one little thing. In society, Jewish or not, you have people who are doing all the bad things, But when you're a Jew, we're held to a different standard.
That's correct.
And we put the highlight on the Jew. They won't say a Protestant Catholic
right.
did such
correct.
And such and such.
Right.
They'll say so-and-so with a black hat and yeah. Rasa Strim yeah. did this.
Okay, so I hear what you're saying.
This is the Chilul Hashem, and we are not worse than anyone else in society.
I want that we should be better.
No. So I'm starting right. from a neutral
I understand. Look,
and then we have to lose.
We have this with the international politics also, the double standards.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, sometimes something happens in a military maneuver or in Tzuk Eitan and so on. We try so hard that there should be no civilian casualties on the other side. Sometimes, you know, you can't help it. It just can't help it, right? Do you know that the United States and NATO forces combined in Iraq and Afghanistan have killed anywhere between 10,000 to 50,000 innocent civilians?
Yeah.
10,000 is agreed by everybody, and some say it's up to 50,000. Any UN resolutions on this? Nothing.
And then another thing you should know, in West Point, they study Israeli military maneuvers, laws, policies, politics.
Okay.
They know this
for okay. So I'm saying is that...
we're a role model.
Yep. We should be a role model. This was called L'Or Goyim, what Yeshayahu HaNavi said. So I'm not embarrassed about the fact that the world holds us up for a higher standard. I mean, from their point of view, it's hypocrisy. But from our point of view, it's Kiddush Hashem if we stand by it, without a doubt. I mean, the humorist said that when Avraham Avinu went to battle to save his nephew Lot in Parshat Lech Lecha, so he says he drafted a militia of 318. The Gemara says he only had one fighter. His name was Eliezer. The word Eliezer is the numerical equivalent of 318. So why didn't the Torah just say he went with Eliezer to do battle? So the answer is that in Avraham Avinu's yeshiva, he had one student, Eliezer. But when he sent the list of his Sfarad HaDatot, he put 318 names. Not a nice thing to say about Avraham Avinu. Not a nice thing at all. Yeah. Okay, so if we take a look at the page on source number 1 and 2, this is Nechama Leibowitz 1.1, and that is contrast parallel sources. Anytime there's a parallel source in Tanakh, anywhere in Tanakh, you put one against the other, and that becomes the focus of the message of the shiur. To use television language, it's called the split screen effect. Split screen, where the same show, same newscast, you can have an interview, and then in one part of the screen you're seeing some type of action of some sort that being discussed in the interview. Of course, this technology, they say necessity is the mother of all technology. What was the necessity to develop split screen? Anybody know? And what year was introduced to TV?
Sports.
Of course, sports. The most important thing in America. How do I know it's the most important thing in America? Salaries. You pay the most to the people most important. So the most important person in America is an athlete. Like when they asked Babe Ruth in 1927, who then earned $80,000. You know what $80,000 was in 1927? It was a fortune, right? Absolute fortune. He said, how do you feel earning more money in the present United States? He thought for a second, he said, I had a better season.
Had a better season.
Had a better season. Sure. Most important people. So what was it? It was in 1963... So the Los Angeles Dodgers had somebody who stole 104 bases. Just blanked out for a second. I remembered his name before. Well, Maury Wills. So it was very important to simultaneously watch the pitcher and Maury Wills on first base, ready to take off. It was very important. Sehr wichtig, as my father would say. Sehr wichtig. So that's why they developed split screen. You can see it. And now you can see two things at the same time. But the Torah thought of split screen a long time ago. So the Rav told us that there were different methods of split screening. One is called Kri and Ktiv. Kri and Ktiv is it's written one way and spelled the other way. So what does that mean? Somebody got it right, somebody got it wrong? No, they're both right. So we're closing in on the Chag HaShavuot. Some of you remember Dean Shmuel Zar, Allah Shalom. He was the Dean of Ritz of the Yeshiva. NYU. Those of you who know Esther Zuroff, I'm talking about her father.
And I was not at the Levaya of Dean Zahar. He died before I was even in the picture. But I heard one of my great mentors in the rabbinate, Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld, when I lived in Kew Garden Hills in 1975, he spoke about the hesped that the Rav gave for Dean Zahar. And it was on Shavuos. And there, you know, the Maisa, the story that Naomi is encouraging her daughter-in-law, Ruth, to, well, she wasn't yet the daughter-in-law. She was the daughter-in-law, but she was an almana. Ruth was being encouraged by her mother-in-law to go down to the field, you know, and really meet up clandestinely with Boaz. You know, some yeshivas have problems, you know, with that, you know, rated R parak. Okay, but that's what Naomi tells her to do, and says v'yaradit. V'sacht, v'rachat, you should do it, you should bathe, you should get dressed, you should go down, v'yaradet. But how is that spelled, v'yaradet? With a yud at the end, v'yaradeti, and I am going down. And the Rav said, what Naomi was telling Ruth, look, I'm sending you, but I'm not leaving you there alone. I'm going to be there with you, hovering above somehow. Don't think there's disconnect here. And the hesped part was, Dean Zahar, Rav Shalom, was responsible for sending young rabbanim to all kinds of mekomot nidachim, way out places, you know, which we used to call Oshkosh, and I found out that's actually a city in Wisconsin. But the Oshkosh is translated into perfect Yiddish, Yene Ek Veld, to the other side of the world. Yene Ek Veld. And rabbanim would go to all kinds of places, and Dean Zahar was careful to keep kesher, keep a contact with them, and sometimes visit, and so on. So he said he played that role of, you know, v'yaradeta, you should go down, but v'yaradeti, I'm also going to be there with you. It's a beautiful hesped. Beautiful hesped. But the Rav said in that context, that the kri and the ktiv, it's spelled v'yaradet, but it's read v'yaradeti, are both true. With the Torah, or in this case the Navi, it's ktuvim, it's in the Megillat Rut, is actually broadcasting two simultaneous messages, and they're both true. So that will factor in every time you see a kri and a ktiv, that you have to split the screen and read it this way, and then again read it that way, and you know, see what it is. And let alone when you have change of words. So if you look at source number one, it says lo tirtzach, lo tinav, lo tignov, lo taneh b'reacha et shaker. What is sheker? It's a lie. You don't say false testimony. Now in source number two, on this parallel, lo tirtzach, Vilo tinaf. It doesn't say lo tinaf. There's a vav. Vilo tinaf. Vilo tinaf. Vilo ta'ane b'reacha ed shav. What's the difference between shav and sheker? It's not the same word. What is a shvuat sheker and what is a shvuat shav? Two different oaths. Both are bad. Both are sins. So shvuat sheker is an oath, and now we're specifying with Shem Hashem, with the name of God in the oath, and that's where the crime comes in. We read it in Kedoshim, Lo tishavu bishmi lashaker, right? You know, but Lo tisa et Shem Hashem Elokecha lashav, in the third of the Ten Commandments. So the shav and sheker. Sheker means the opposite of the truth. You take an oath b'Shem Hashem that right now it's nighttime in Yerushalayim. That's a lie, an outright lie. What is shav? It's a useless shvua. I take an oath in the name of Hashem that right now it's broad daylight in Yerushalayim. Okay, it's true. But what do I have to waste God's name on that for? Everybody knows that. So what would be an expression of lo taneh b'reacha et shaker? You said a lie. You came to court and you testified on behalf or against a person with the wrong story. Deliberately. Deliberately. You gave over in court and baked in the wrong story. That's a lie. What would be shav? Shav would be unnecessary testimony. Why would somebody be guilty of unnecessary testimony? You know, a lot of times people just love to talk, love to talk, love to talk. I mean, I have a daughter that's in this category. So when she was a young kid, they used to say she swallowed a cassette, you know, just, you know, a tape recorder. Sad, upset until she learned to, you know, calm herself down a little bit. Cassette, this is it's a character trait, but sometimes people volunteer more information than they should be. They're asked about something, and they go and tell the whole geschichte, and they start revealing things that probably should not be revealed.
Because they think that they have to get in the whole story. You know, mitzvah to get in the whole story if that's not what you're being asked to give. So this could happen in the context of testimony as well. And all this extra can adversely affect the opinion that the judges are going to get from the testimony. If the testimony is not germane to the subject at hand, keep quiet. No need for add-ons. He didn't say a lie. Whatever he's saying is all true. But it's irrelevant at this moment. So an ed, a witness, has to focus on the story and hit the relevant pieces of information that are going to be relevant to the ultimate decision of the Dayanim, and not to start telling Maisalach of the grandmother. And this is very, very important. Eid Shav, as opposed to Eid Shaker. Both are problematic. And we'll see, maybe not today, but we'll see that the Chazal used the phrase, certain things were said b'dibur echad, simultaneously. The most famous one is Zachor and Shamor, because we know it from the Lechadaiti. Shamor v'Zachor b'dibur echad. But the Medrash says it in its order. Zachor v'Shamor. Zachor is Sefer Shmot, Shamor is Sefer Dvarim. But it says Zachor Yom Shabbat HaKacho, it says Shamor Yom Shabbat HaKacho. So Zachor v'Shamor were said together, and we'll explain this later. But the same Medrash says, Sheker v'Shav b'dibur echad. So in other words, what the Torah is trying to tell us, that you might think that, all right, the shek is terrible. Shav, no, it's not nice, not a good thing. But that's not the worst thing in the world, you know. He didn't say a lie. Sheker v'shav b'dibur echad. Be careful. If the Torah wants that the edut should be on the money, then adding unnecessary information creates an impression that would be incorrect. It may create some type of fuzziness over the whole picture, and that can ruin the overall impression that the Dayanim are going to receive from the witnesses. And therefore, in the large story, it can become a sheker also. And that's sheker v'shav b'dibur echad. But I want to focus on the vav achibur. In the right side, there's no vav. It's lo tirtzach, lo tinaf, lo tignov, lo ta'aneh b'recha, lo tachmod, lo tachmod. In source 2, it's lo tirtzach, because that's the first pasuk, but then it goes with a vav. V'lo tinav, v'lo tignov, v'lo ta'aneh, v'lo tachmod, v'lo titaveh. So the fact that lo tachmod splits in the second version to two different averot, lo tachmod, lo titaveh, we started talking about that last week, that's an independent parsha. But it's v, it's a conjunction and for the entire piece. That's not a small piece of information. So why is that? So hey, you don't have to be, you know, the biggest darshan in the world to really figure it out, that the Torah is giving us two different messages. Message number one is that each Aveira, or for that matter, each mitzvah, has a life in itself. Has to be understood independently, has to be analyzed independently, has to be respected and observed, irrespective of the fact that a person is not observing any other mitzvah. Each mitzvah has its time and place. But there's also a continuum when it comes to the mitzvot of the Torah. It's a package deal. It's not that, all right, you know, I'll keep 20% and that's it. No, you keep 20%, that means 80% are going to fall. Because not only 80% are going to fall, but the 20% will never be perfect either. Because there's interdependence amongst all of the mitzvot. Certainly in terms of halachic detail, many times the Gemara will teach us a detail that's derived from another area of Torah. And that's where Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law, comes in. To build these bridges. And hence, there's a Vav HaChibur. Vav HaChibur means connection. It means, you know what might bring about Retzach? Well, it might be an episode of Tin'av, of Ni'uf. It might be that a man or woman, they do things outside the framework of their marital contract, and sometimes a wife has a new man in her life, and she wants to get rid of him, and you can dial a murder today. It's good in the mafia language, it's called put out a contract. So that can be done, it can lead to Retzach. And it could be a business transaction that goes sour, and it costs you multi-million dollars, and you decide to put somebody away for posterity so that you don't lose all this money. That can also lead to Retzach. V'lo tignov, it can lead. Take a look at source number 6, in the bottom, towards the bottom of the page. It says,
in Mishlei Perek Aleph, Kein Orchot Kol Botzei Abatza Et Nefesh Be'alav Yikach. Mishlei, in many, it says 31 chapters. We all know the last chapter, Eshet Chayil, because we sing it Friday night. But the other 30 chapters are also important. And most of them are just, they seem to be independent sayings, and you really have to be really on the ball to figure out what the theme of the chapter is, where all of the sayings seem to be very, very independent. So I'm not here to discuss Perek Aleph, just to lift out of context, Pasuk Yutet, Kein Orchot Kol Botzei Abatza, Nefesh Be'alav Yikach. So one of the nice things we had at YU was that we had required courses in the college part of a certain, first of all, there was what they call liberal arts. For the first 2 years, you didn't really major. So everybody had to have a tasting of a little math, a little science. You know, so we call bio for non-science majors, right? My wife called it bio for idiots, right? So I had bio for idiots, and I had a great teacher, Rabbi Tendler, and it was one of my best classes I had in Yeshiva University, Rabbi Tendler, for that. Because he knew we were not going to be doctors, so he really went to town to teach us about Rufuah B'Halakha and anything that had to do. We learned so much. We learned how to take a green etrog and make it yellow overnight because of all kinds of chemical reactions. We learned what really chametz was and what the machloket between Rashi and Tosfot was with regard to the egg matzahs from a biochemical point of view. It says, I mean, you couldn't get better than Rabbi Tendler for bio for idiots. I mean, because he knew he didn't have to bring us anywhere. We weren't going anywhere in bio after that course. So he just did one. For that year, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein had on his desk organ transplant, heart transplants. And that was a big issue. So Rav Tendler obviously was involved in it with his father-in-law. So that's what the shir was. That's what he talked about. It was really phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. The yeshiyut, the personality. So one of the things we had to do in YU, there was, besides the Gemara learning and so on, so as part of the college, there were shirim and Tanakh. So I had the shirim and Tanakh, and some of the ramim of the yeshiva actually gave those shirim, and some were outsiders. So I had a teacher, and you'll probably recognize the name, but not the person who you would think I'm talking about. His name was Rabbi Dr. Aaron Lichtenstein. Not Rav Aaron, Zichron Lebracha. But the Ibadel Lor Chaim Tovim, a first cousin of Rav Aaron, Rabbi Dr. Aaron Lichtenstein. They were a kafil, a look-alike, Vamash. Not only a look-alike, but a sound-alike. a very monotonous type of presentation. Also a Talmud from Chaim Berlin Yeshiva, but then went on to become a historian of ancient Near East texts. We had to read a book by this guy Pritchard. It was a phenomenal course. And he taught us Tanakh, and not by Posuk Rashi. He wasn't a student of Nechama Leibowitz, but all by himself he understood. If you don't see the whole Sefer, you haven't seen anything. So even though we didn't learn every Pasuk, but he really capsulized the whole Sefer. Mishlei was a little different, difficult, because it's difficult to capsulize the Sefer. I remember on this Pasuk, Dr. Lichtenstein said, where does the word Betza factor in Tanakh? Betza is not just money. It's usually translated as money. It's money that was earned in a crooked fashion. Ma betza ki narog et achinu v'chisinu et damo. By Mechirat Yosef. Yehuda says, you know, let's make a quick buck on him. We want to get rid of Yosef already. We can make some profit on it also. You know, it's a very Jewish thing to say, right? We're going to sell our brother down. Might as well make a few bucks on the deal. Ma betza ki narog et achinu v'chisinu et damo. Or where the Torah says, but when Yitro tells Moshe Rabbeinu that you need qualifications for being the judicial leadership, so Anshei Emet, Yirei Elokim, Sonei Betza, it says Betza, it's the end of the pasuk. But the Sonei Betza means somebody who hates Betza. What's Betza? He won't take graft. He won't take a bribe. That's what Betza is. It's crooked earned money. So what does Shlomo HaMelech say in Mishlei? If you're Orach Chaim, what does Orach Chaim mean? This is the way you do things. Not that once you slipped and you know you took a graft. That's not what he's talking about. He says, if this is the way you conduct your business, if everything is batza, ken orchot, called botzea batza, you are one step away from murder. You have crossed the red line of integrity at nefesh be'alav yikach. You are... there's a possibility here you become suspect that you may commit murder, because at one point the chemdat mamon, the avat kesef, is going to be so great that somebody's going to stand in the way that you actually may justify murdering somebody. And this is really why there's a vavachibur between lo tirtzach and lo tignov.
And of course, Lo Tinaf is a different parasha that can lead to Retzach as well. And it begins with, the ladder starts with the lowest on the rung. The lowest on the rung is the 10th. And the 10th is Lo Tachmod and Lo Titaver, which can either lead to Lo Tignov, it can lead to Lo Tinaf, which can all lead to Lo Tirzach. So that's why there's Vav HaChibur here, because it's a package deal, those last five of the Dibrot. And if you look at source number 7, the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, Ben Azai Omer, Have a ratz lemitzvah kala kavachamua. You should run to an easy mitzvah like a more difficult mitzvah. The fact that Ben Azai suggests there are things called an easy mitzvah as opposed to a more difficult, who writes the criteria? Who's the judge here as to what is considered a difficult or an easier mitzvah? So the Rambam in his Mishnah commentary gives us some criteria, and it has nothing to do with how much expenditure, financial expenditure, or how much physical effort. It has to do with a value system where Rambam puts tzitzis as one of the chamurot. I mean, my gosh, it's the easiest mitzvah in the world. It doesn't cost much money, and you don't even notice it when you're wearing tzitzis. So unless you're wearing a heavy Turkish talus, you know, Turkish wool talus in a 40 degree weather in Eilat, then you'll know that it's a heavy mitzvah. But normally, you just goes blind. You don't even notice it. Why does Rambam include it as mitzvah chamura? Because Chazal said shkula keneged kol mitzvot. It's equivalent to all the mitzvot. So it's heavy duty. It's a heavy duty mitzvah. But anyway, so and then the Ben Azai continues, says boreach mina averot, and you should flee from any avera. Why? Because mitzvah goreret mitzvah, va'avera goreret avera. One leads to the other, and one leading to the other is a real problem. It's not only you did this particular avera, but it's going to lead to the next and to the next and to the next. That's the vava chibur syndrome that the Aseret HaDibrot is drawing our attention to. You have to be careful, not just about the individual avera, but you also have to be careful that the avera might lead to another 10 averot. Mitzvah also is like that. A mitzvah will lead to another mitzvah. And he says, Sheschar mitzvah mitzvah, v'schar avera avera. What does that mean? That the reward of the mitzvah is the very mitzvah. You might interpret it that the reward for the mitzvah is the opportunity to do another mitzvah. That's the reward. You say, that's the whole reward? Yes! Yes! That a Kadosh Baruch Hu is interested that you should be doing another mitzvah. There's a medrash that's found in Masechet Brachot Daf Mem on the Pasuk in Parshat Bishalach. Vayomer im shamoa tishma. Im shamoa tishma, which means if you're going to do, listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're going to be given the opportunity to listen further. And of course the converse is also true. And that's why mitzvah haba liyadcha, it says, al tacha mitzena, if you have a mitzvah at hand, don't waste the opportunity, but try to do it, you know, don't push it off. And habala taher mesayin, if a person is really on the right path, and sometimes there are challenges and difficulties on the way, Kadosh Baruch Hu will glide you, help you glide you along, you'll get by it, and so on. Because this is mitzvah goreret mitzvah, and there's also avera goveret avera. And I have a little bit of a chidush, you know, when we say vidui, so some people say vidui every morning in Tachnun, some people say vidui just on Monday and Thursday, Asham Nebagadnu, and some people say it just when they say slichot. And whether it's a fast day, or the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, or Elul, everybody's saying slichot. So the Asham, if you haven't picked it up, it's all alphabetized, right? It's Ashamnu, Begadnu, Gezalnu. So the author of the Chaye Adam, Rabbi Avram Danzig in Chus Aseres Mechuba, so he has what we call, you have in Texas in America, we call it the short form and the long form. Remember, the short form is Ashamnu, Begadnu, Gezalnu. The long form is Ashamnu, and now it gives you all the averis that start with an aleph. And then Begadnu. Here, all the averis that I remember when I was in the Gush in 72, they printed it out in stencil. Remember stencils?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
There was a sefer that was put out for prime stencil before they were able to print stuff. This. Right, so it was maybe that was the ditto. Those are the ditto. Right, that smelled like mayonnaise, right? That blue ink. Purple, right. And you always got your fingers dirty when you touch the stencil itself.
And it was wet.
That was always wet, right. No, but then you had the black ink. It was a mess. What a messy thing. So the stencils. I still have it home in one of my old machzorim. It's already ripped up pages. But they handed it out, and they said, before Yom Kippur, go through the list and take a pencil and mark out what's not relevant. And what is relevant, so when you say Hashamnu, you say the other three or four that are not marked out. So it's like you personalize your vidui. It's very interesting, because everybody goes, Hashamnu, Gadnu, Gadnu, it doesn't mean anything. But so here, if you took some time beforehand and really took stock as what the year looked like, okay, and you know, Hashamnu. So there's A, B, C, D, 25 affairs with Aleph. 15 of them I never even encountered. The other 10 I'm willing to say vidui for. Okay, and you go, Bet, Bagadnu, and so on. But in the standard, Hashamnu Bagadnu, you know, Gazalnu, Dibarnu Dofi, He'evinu, Vihirshanu. What is Vihirshanu? Yeah. All of these words are words of Chet, Asham. Ashamnu is Asham, we know what Asham, Korban Asham, Hashem, Bigidan, you write treason, Bagadnu, Gazalnu, theft, Dibarnu Dofi, we spoke something that was out of line, could have been a lie, could have been whatever. Lashon Hara, right? So he'evinu from the word avon. What is vehirshanu from the word resha? So well, one second, but how did the vav come in there? That's like ve and hirshanu. That's what it means. Vehirshanu and hirshanu. There is no word that begins with a vav. Vav is a conjunction and. So the words don't begin with that. All the others have. Hashanu gadnu gazalnu dibanu dofi avinu hirshanu zadnu unet zadon chamasnu chamas. Okay, so these things we know, every single one. But the vav, I believe, is the vav achibur. Not only are you saying vidui for the avera that you did, but you're saying vidui for the fact that you did an avera and it brought on a few more customers of averas. It led you to more averas. So even though you're going to say vidui on those averas also, but there's a defined avera of avera goreret avera. You did something that caused you to do another avera. Vehirshan. You say al chait on the vavachibur, on the vilotina, vilotino, vilotane, on the vav. To see, it's a nice chiddush. So that's an understanding of the totality of Torah, totality. But in the first dibrot, we get it without the vavachibur, which means the message is. Each one is to be understood independently, is to be defined independently, like any other avera, like any other mitzvah. Okay. What we didn't do yet was this source number 5, the Rambam in Ilchot Gzeila Avidah. We were just running out of time, but the Rambam actually tells us that in the last of the last of the Dibrot, Lo Tachmod, so in the Dibrot Hashni'im, the second version in Parshat Vetchanan and Devarim, it says, Lo tachmod eshet re'echa v'lo titaveh. So titaveh is something different. Tachmod, last week I already began to say this, that lo titaveh is simply a pang of jealousy that somebody has something that I don't have. Period. You don't do anything about it. But what if you're really so jealous that you badger the guy until the end, you're a nuddik, and the only reason the guy says, alright, fine, I'll sell you the car. And he wants to get you off the bank. So you buy it, you pay for it. But it shows how much you were jealous that he has it and you don't. So that's lo tachmod. But what if the guy doesn't want to sell it after all this? You end up taking it anyway. That's geneva. Or gzela. Right, in this case, geneva, lo tignob, lo tigzol, they're first cousins. They go together. So you know, that's what the Rambam says. If you're a thief, you get three averis. Because it must have started with lo titaveh on some level. It must have worked its way up. It must have worked its way up to the extent that you took it illegally as a gezel. But it didn't start with gezel. It started with something lower. So Ram says you get three averis. It's a bonus. You get lo tigzol and you get with the package lo titaveh and lo tachmod. And that's what really the Rambam is saying in source number 5. If you take a look at the last, second to last paragraph of source number 5. Hata'ava mevi'a lidei chimud, v'chimud mevi'a lidei gezel. Shim lo ratzu ha'ba'alim limko, ava pishahar hirbeh lehem bedamim. You suggested, offered a lot of money. Hivtzir bereim, it means you nudged him. Yavoli dei gezel, it might lead to gezel. It might lead to gezel. And the Rambam has the parsha of Achav and Navot as an illustration of how this ultimately can lead to Retzach as well. And that's why it's all there in this continuum of Tava and Tachmod and so on. Alright, next week we will look at, I'm not sure we're finished here with the Dibrot Ben Adam L'Chaveiro,
But we will eventually get to the first set of the first side of the Luchot as well. I'm just going to give you a homework to think. Okay, you don't have to write anything. I'm not going to come around marking it. But you know that in many shuls, you have the Luchot somewhere on top of the Ohr Kodesh or on the Parochet. You can't get the whole thing on it. So what they do is abbreviate. Anochi Hashem. Lo Yiyeh. Right? Lo Tisa. Zachor et, kabed et. Right. The second side is easier because it's two words: lo tirzach, lo tinaf, lo tignov, lo taane, lo tachmo. That's what the artists basically put on the artistic versions on the parochet or on top of the Aron Kodesh and so on. In one shul that I saw in the town of Lansut in Poland, so they have a reconstruction of the Beit HaKnesset, that tremendous Beit HaKnesset that existed. And it had such a luchot on top of the Aron Kodesh. And by the fourth diber, it did not say zahor et, it said shamor et.
Watch.
The version of Parshat Ve'etchanan. And I have not yet heard a convincing answer why, but I have a hunch. I'm still trying to verify. I have a hunch that the Chanukat Beit HaKnesset was done on Shabbat Parshat Ve'etchanan after Tisha B'Av. And just to remember that they put in the Shamor et Yom Shabbat of Parshat Ve'etchanan. It's as good a suggestion as anybody else has, which usually was, I don't have a clue. Most people, first of all, a lot of people don't even notice it. But I notice these things. And I think this could be an interesting take on why the artist put Shamor. We're going back 350 years, by the way. 350 years ago. Maybe one of the follow Chodadi, but the question there is why the Rav Shlomo Levi Al-Kabatz turned it around. So one of the reasons is he needed the shin because of the acrostic of the Shlomo Halevi. But why did he do that? He could have found other, he could have used the word Shabbat to begin a poem, which also has a shin. It has to do with the Kabbalistic thing. I'm jumping now and I'll explain this in greater detail. Because in the Kabbalah, the night of Shabbat is Shamor and the daytime of Shabbat is Zachor. So from a Kabbalistic understanding, it's the reverse order of the Chumash. It's not Zachor v'Shamor, but it's Shamor v'Zachor. That's why he did it. And then, of course, once he did that, he already used the shin for the Shlomo. Likrat, Mikdash, Hitnari, and he got the Shlomo in there already. Okay.